A quick note for our listeners. This Radio Parkies presentation is sponsored by YOPN Network and includes people who have been living with Parkinson's for quite some time. The vocal challenges that you hear are due to the progression of this disease as well as deep brain stimulation surgeries. And we come as we are here. Everyone has a purpose and a contribution, and everyone is welcome. Thank you for listening.
You are unique, active, determined, resilient. You are not your diagnosis, and you are not alone. This is Young Onset Parkinson's Network. We believe young onset Parkinson's disease does not define you. You define it. We are a safe place to learn, connect, and engage within a supportive community that actually gets it, because we've got it too. Welcome to Young Onset Parkinson's Network. Living well starts here.
Welcome to this week's episode of the YOPN Living Well Starts Here podcast, where we explore the incredible power of human connection and the extraordinary things that can happen when people come together. Today, we bring you the inspiring story of Michel Plancourt and Marc Limbert. These two men met through a shared experience of living with Parkinson's disease, and their friendship sparked an idea that would change the lives of people all over the world. Together, they founded the No Silver Bullet 4PD Support Group, a community dedicated to helping those with Parkinson's disease navigate the challenges of their condition with support and understanding. Join us today as we dive into the incredible story of Michel and Marc and learn how their friendship and dedication to helping others has made a profound impact on the lives of countless people. It's a story of hope, resilience, and the remarkable power of human connection.
Well, I think the easy answer is, after diagnosis, we're both curious about what we could do about our Parkinson's. And we both came to the conclusion there's more to do than just take medicine, basically. And that led us both to a nutritional expert called Lucille Leader, who specializes, has a clinic for people with PD. And we both joined her consultancy, which was flipped onto Zoom because of COVID, basically. And we ended up on the same session, got chatting, formed a WhatsApp group, formed a forum, and No Silver Bullet was formed, really. So it went from there.
Isn't it amazing how you don't know somebody at all and find something in common with them, and suddenly they're your best friend?
Exactly. It is strange. I mean, it's one of the upsides of PD. There aren't many, but that's definitely one of them. New friendship.
A silver lining.
Exactly.
You guys started a group called No Silver Bullet for PD. How'd you come up with that name, and why'd you start the group?
I think it came up a tiny bit tongue-in-cheek originally, because the group is still informal, but at the start it was very informal. It was just, as Marc said, a few people who had gotten to meet during the nutrition seminar who basically decided to speak to each other on WhatsApp. And after a while, we just said, well, don't we just do a little Zoom meeting so we can see our faces during COVID? And basically, and I think we all sort of like realized that there would not be a single bullet, a single solution to our condition. The name was chosen a tiny bit tongue-in-cheek, but it is very, very serious in the sense that Marc and I believe that we will only be able to manage our symptoms properly or slow down progression of the condition if we can, by having a multi-pronged approach that includes, of course, medicine that is critical, but also very important aspects like exercise, nutrition, meditation potentially, and even technology. So this is basically where the No Silver Bullet name come from. Interestingly, even if someone was to find a miracle cure to Parkinson's, it is unlikely that a single drug would be able to help us. And it is very, very likely that we will always need a combination of various solutions to help ourselves.
Michel and Marc, I'm sorry, both of you guys have different accents. So I'm interested to hear a little bit about both of your differing backgrounds. So Michel, if you don't mind going first, where are you from? What are you all about? And then Marc, just follow that up.
Sure. So I'm 57 years old. Basically was born in Belgium, where I spent the first 20 years of my life. But the next 37, I can't believe it's so many, have been spent mainly in the UK. So I was lucky enough to stop working when I was diagnosed 3 years ago, and I really had no more reason to stay in London, that is kind of congested and expensive and hectic. And I decided to move to Oxford, which is far more tame and relaxing. So this is it. I used to have a successful career in financial services in London, but it was actually a senior management job in a financial institution that was extremely rewarding, but extremely demanding. And I think that that pressure no longer was possible for me, but probably didn't really help my condition for a starter.
And I lived in South Side of London. I've lived in the southeast of England all my life, basically. Turned 60 just before Christmas. I know you find it hard to believe, but it's true. I was diagnosed in 2014, basically, after feeling that my left arm was not working properly. My gait had got a bit old, and I was twitching my thumb when I was typing a lot. So I found it a little bit strange. So my GP, he said, don't be daft, you're too young to get PD. You know, I'll send you to see a specialist anyway. Saw a neurologist, and within seconds, basically, you know, diagnosed Parkinson's, which was a bit blunt. Other than that, I've been married for 32 years, got three kids, all between about 30 and 23, all left home now. Self-employed for about 25, 26 years and work in the property sector in the UK. I'm very lucky to have a very supportive wife, family, and good friends. So that's pretty much me.
So, Mark, it's a beautiful thing about radio is you can lie to everybody about the way you look. That's how Mike and Mike have made it.
Yeah, because they're so handsome that it would be distracting otherwise.
Gosh, very well said. Very well said. I like you a lot already.
They would have blown up people's TVs.
Gene, thanks for the compliments you got for me over there.
Face made for radio, right, Mike?
For sure. I like you said this. You said this is Parkinson's life. Parkinson's disease is not a death sentence. It's a wake-up call.
Yeah, absolutely. True. Actually, I picked that up through a website. It's not from us originally, but I just think it's something to remember. Actually, everyone knows that you're not supposed to die from Parkinson's. You die with Parkinson's, right? That's another one of those sentences. So it really is about making the most of our lives to manage our symptoms actively and to get ourselves the best quality of life possible for as long as we can. So it is not a death sentence for sure.
Michelle, you seem to have picked up on that pretty early. You said that you were diagnosed 2 years ago.
Three years.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I think that probably taking that mindset and just ran with it right from the start. So acceptance probably came pretty early for you, huh?
That's true. Actually, in a sense, I think that actually the job I was in and the life I used to live was extremely hectic and extremely driven, extremely disciplined and extremely, I would say, aggressive in a sense, commercially at the stage. And I've retained that discipline in the way that I approached the problem that was handed over to me. Now, it took me a little while to swallow the news and absorb the news. As Mark basically said, I had the same experience. The neurologist who basically gave me the diagnostic was quite brutal. There was no mention of anything that I could do to help manage my symptoms. It really looked like a condemnation without the pill. This is it. You have Parkinson's. You have a few years of relative quality of life. And after that, it could be very uncertain. And I remember walking back to my office in London, in the city of London. It was a beautiful day. And I had that awareness that my life would change forever, but I didn't understand yet to what extent. And I remember calling my girlfriend, who I'm going to marry this year, by the way, a wonderful person helping me massively with the day-to-day management of my symptoms. But basically, I knew my life would change forever, and I just couldn't really figure out how. You know, it is one of those things that you think it only happens to others until it happens to you. And I, like Mark, I realized actually that there were a lot of symptoms I had had before that I hadn't really put together. The reason I had gone and see a neurologist was that I really was struggling to write and to type. Then I realized that actually I had noticed more and more people overtaking me as I was walking in the morning to go to work. And I just thought I was relaxed and they were hectic. Actually, I didn't realize that actually it was another symptom, the slow walking. I was struggling to project my voice in large meetings and in board meetings. I basically had to make a real effort to be loud. And that was another symptom I hadn't really put together. I was struggling with pressure more and more when speaking in public, for instance, and multitasking. So all those things, the brain fog, all those things that we're all familiar with basically came together. Quite quickly, undertook a massive search. And of course, the internet can help you and can hinder you. But there is a fact that there is a lot of information out there. And I started realizing that actually there was a lot of things that could be done to manage symptoms that would not be communicated to me. And actually, I have seen three neurologists since I've been diagnosed, and no one has ever advised me to exercise. No one has ever told me that I could help my body to heal itself through nutrition. And when you mentioned that you're feeling a bit anxious, that you're feeling anxiety, people are very quick to prescribe you drugs, but no one talks about meditation. So after all that exercise, basically, I now have a routine that has become my full-time job. I'm lucky that I was able to stop working, and I realized that not everyone has that capability. But basically, my full-time job now is to manage my symptoms, and I have a whole program of exercise, nutrition, meditation every day. It's sometimes very demanding. It requires a lot of discipline, but that's what I'm doing nowadays. That's my new life. And like, to be honest with you, it's a pretty good life.
It's actually quite annoying. You're so bloody disciplined. It's pretty taking it to your nth degree. I mean, there's many more terms and do a bit of yoga one day and a bit next time. I'm having a conversation with you and you've been doing this morning and that. I know what you're doing every single minute of the day.
I know. I'm a bit ashamed of that, because actually some people might envy that discipline, but at the same time, I'm also a believer. I went through not a full psychotherapy, but I just spoke to a psychotherapist on a few occasions, and she told me that actually it is entirely possible that actually there would be a risk that I would replicate that rigor and that discipline and that day-to-day routine to a point that it might be counterproductive. So in a sense, I'm just trying to keep some flexibility, because I think that actually Parkinson's is also sometimes associated to certain types of people and behavior. And I'm probably a prime candidate for that.
And we can't be too rigid, since Parkinson's tends to take over our schedule. Like my mother's fond of the saying, man makes plans and God laughs, or life is what happens while we're making our plans. So Parkinson's kind of dictates some of what you intend to do. And as the disease progresses, have you noticed that you have to take the schedule down a bit?
You definitely need to adjust it as you go along. It's sort of, you can't set out what you're going to do for the next year or year and a half, because it will change. It will change next week. It will change tomorrow, let alone in a year's time. So you need to be flexible, really.
So, Michelle, I think I read something that you were CEO of a company.
Yes.
What was the company called? What did you do? What kind of work did you do?
Oh, I will keep it. I won't mention the name, but actually it is a very large broker, financial broker. So basically it's a company that stands between large institutions, mainly banks, and helps them execute complex transactions all day long. So my job was to basically supervise 1,000 brokers, and those brokers were extremely hard-driven, money-driven people, basically. Who were paid commissions. So you basically had to sort of like tame the beast, if you want, of all that energy, and make sure that in an increasingly regulated environment that you would behave as well as the best bank in the world, while at the same time being a slightly smaller institution with a different type of stripes. So it was the job of my dreams. But I think that actually, as Mark mentioned before, slightly, in joking it a bit, I tend to take things very seriously and very close to my heart, and I'm quite extreme in the way that I'm operating. And I think that may have contributed to my Parkinson's. You know, there is no scientific analysis behind that, but I think that actually some of my qualities, professional qualities, were basically perhaps contributing to putting me or exhausting my body during my career. Those things are good from the outside and were rewarded quite a lot during my career. But I think that now I'm just trying to be far more relaxed and meditate. And I'm not successful in that every day, I can say. I do still get angry too often on small things. I get wound up too much. And so for me, meditation is basically one of the tools for me to make myself a better person.
Stress has played a part in both our lives. I think Michelle more in terms of the stress in his daily life and the routines and the pressure he had in that respect. And me, I had a business which... They say your Parkinson starts about 8 years, 9 years before you realize you've got it. And I actually had a fairly serious breakout of a business. And I think that was the seed that grew into, you know, this Parkinson. So stress is an interesting concept.
I just wanted to mention, Michael, it's quite funny that Mark mentioned stress and we're all talking about stress. One of our next interviews in March will be with a guy called Rick Heimisch, who basically was recommended to us by Baz Bloom on the topic of stress. So I'd be very curious to understand a bit more about this, how the stress basically contributes to Parkinson, how the stress impacts the symptoms of Parkinson. So stay tuned.
Well, there are a lot of published articles about norepinephrine deficiency in Parkinson's disease. So here's your out. When we get upset, we don't calm down as quickly because our neurotransmitters are a little bit off. And I don't know all the language, but you can look this up. I'm going to post it in the chat for you. So you could say, honey, it's my neoepinephrine, I don't even know what you call it. Sorry.
I want to take it back a little bit, and we got to know Michelle a little bit, but not Mark. Mark, how long have you been diagnosed? And I see that you've got a lot of books behind you. You probably are aware.
And some bottles. Just kidding. There's nothing there.
Exactly. It's all non-alcoholic, obviously.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Mark.
Well, I've been in property pretty much all my life. I started life as a surveyor many, many years ago. Spent a bit of time in real estate. Probably for 25, 30 years, I've always run businesses in terms of investment businesses, development businesses, finding investors for people, buying and selling houses for myself. So I've always sort of, you know, done that sort of thing. Not on the tools, so to speak. I've always been more of a sort of management and project management sort of role. As I say, three kids. I wouldn't say I've ever had a particularly pressure job. I've always avoided the corporate life, which obviously Michelle loves, but that's always been thing I've always steered away from. So whenever I've worked for a company, which is a long time ago now, the minute it got bought out by somebody else, I was off. It's like, see you, I'm off, going to do something completely different. I enjoy the challenge. I enjoy somebody saying, do you fancy doing this? And, you know, the road it leads to, really. So I'm sort of semi-retired now. Part of that, I think, is the Parkinson's slowed me down, the apathy and the brain fog, as Michelle mentioned. Part of it is sort of opportunities that died a bit in COVID. Part of it is old age as well. You get to a stage where you think, you know, all your friends are retiring. My problem is I've never had a proper job, so I haven't really got anything I can retire from, which is a bit of an issue. So I've got to keep spinning a few plates as long as I can. So that's pretty much me.
We look like adults.
Yeah, ish.
Either of you deal with depression or anxiety?
With depression?
Or anxiety, either one or both.
Well, I mean, as I mentioned, for me, in my case, I think that one major source of anxiety when I was diagnosed is, first of all, the realization that you have had it for several years, like Mark said, but also the fact that in my case, my father had Parkinson's and passed away quite recently. I think that it was just before I was diagnosed. So I had seen what the condition can lead to, and it was not pretty at all. And I was really struggling with those images of wheelchair and total immobilization. And I think that actually for me, and I started basically several techniques of relaxation and meditation that really freed me up entirely from that. I mean, for now, I do realize that this is never forever. It included meditation, a technique called meditation and Qigong really helped me quite a bit. And some techniques of relaxation based on Indian meditation or Indian breathing exercises. So all of this I had never done before. I wouldn't like our audience to think that this is a guy who is into meditation for all his life and he's born and has been raised in that. On the contrary, I had never meditated a single time until I was diagnosed 3 years ago. And I basically started by using some apps like everyone would do. And then I started having like a meditation coach. I started having a Qigong master helping me. And since then, I've been practicing this for 45 minutes a day during the week, since then for the last 3 years. And I must say that actually it has really not only allowed me to expand the way I'm thinking about the world in general and my spirituality, but it has really somehow taken me away from those bad images entirely. And the reason I mentioned that to our audience is that when I mentioned anxiety to my neurologist, they were very quick to prescribe me drugs. And of course, those drugs will have a role to play. And depression, for instance, is a real illness that needs to be cured, I guess, or treated with real medicine. But I would just ask people to be open-minded to the impact, the positive impact that more natural solutions can have on them.
Mark, how about you?
I've always been fairly lighthearted about things and fairly, you know, positive. Anxious, yes, sometimes anxious. Do I get more anxious? Yes, definitely. I think my Parkinson's has dented my confidence a little bit, maybe more anxious in social situations. I've always been a pretty social person, and I think more now my wife will notice I'm not as keen to go out, and it's like, you know, rather stay at home and watch a good film and drink a nice glass of wine. I think in terms of depression, I wouldn't say I'm depressed about things, but I definitely have dark days. I think everybody does. If you've got Parkinson's, there'll be some days where you can't help but say, why me? But you have to buck out of it pretty quickly and look in the brighter side and the positives of life. So, you know, it's challenges. As Michelle said, I think some people, it's a big monster to deal with. And I think yoga and meditation and mindfulness play a big part. And I'm like Michelle, it's the last thing I probably would have considered a number of years ago, but I find myself doing yoga every day and I find it relaxes me and helps. So I think it's definitely worth looking into. It's definitely a good tool to have in your box.
If I can mention one more thing on the point of anxiety and depression, I think that actually there is a real risk with Parkinson's to be very self-centered and focused on oneself only. Social relationships are extremely important. And for me, No Silver Bullet was, first of all, a wonderful way of getting friends with Mark, because we didn't know each other before. But also by trying to give to people, to give hope and to give information, to give help, in a sense, it's extremely therapeutic as well. So, and basically, the more you're busy doing positive things for others, the less you focus on the bad things that may be happening to you.
Heather and I were both smiling when you said that, because I could tell that was the question she was leading you to.
It's almost like you guys are psychic. Did you get in my diary or my head? I was just going to ask.
Yeah, you guys are really brothers. And that's where I was thinking, and I know Heather was too, that this is another thing that helps with the anxiety and the depression are these social networks that we form. And, you know, the bond that you two have, is it's beautiful. And I can tell that No Silver Bullet is probably that for you guys, and then more so. So tell us about a little bit more about how it started and how it's grown and where you guys anticipate it going.
Well,
if I start with how it started, as I say, we both met on a nutrition course. There was just a spark. And I think I might have messaged Michelle to say, look, let's exchange numbers, form a little WhatsApp group and try and share stuff. You know, we both have the same sort of open mind about things. We added a few people to that group. It got to a stage where, of course, with WhatsApp, one of the biggest problems, if someone joins it late, you can't see the information that's been shared previously. So we popped it onto a forum. I think initially we had an idea of just building a forum really for people to come onto. And as Michelle said, we started with sort of bi-weekly get-togethers and Zoom calls, just to have a general conversation and chat. But it led to greater things, really. And I think it gives us a lot of pleasure. I think, to be honest, isn't it, Michelle? I mean, you know, there's the bond and there's the relationships you build, but it's a good focus for us both to have.
Yes, I think that actually what basically happened naturally is that after a few sessions with our little group, we decided to bring in a speaker who basically was the lady who had done the nutrition seminar we had all attended a few months before. And one thing led to another, and we started feeling that actually by having such great speakers, it was a real waste to just have it for 12 people. We just thought what we learned today about, for instance, mitochondria and cell energy is so interesting that we really wished a bigger audience had been able to have the opportunity to listen to it. And that's how we basically moved from like a little slightly self-centered small group of people to Mark and I taking the lead and basically opening up to the whole world, because our customer base, to call it that way, is 10 million people around the world. So there is a lot of people with Parkinson's who basically we can reach out to, trying to bring them information. What we're really aiming to do, and I think it's really important to stress that, is that we have that vision that we want people to become true generalists in their condition. Basically, in the course of our medical appointments, we will be meeting a lot of specialists, neurologists in particular, but others too. What we will not be meeting is the people who can talk holistically about the whole gamut of things you can do to improve your lifestyle. And that's the second point. Basically, first is to become generalist in your condition, to know more than most people about what is affecting you, which I think everyone should normally aim for. But few people do. And the second thing is really to sort of like give people the information they need to make their own decisions about how they want to change their lifestyle, to manage the symptoms and to slow down progression. That's really the two-pronged approach that we have.
Now, you guys certainly hit the world pretty well with your videos. I think I saw one with 30,000 hits on it.
Yeah, I think we've got one, I think, which is collected over two videos by a lady who did red light therapy, a doctor in Australia. And I think that's just hit 50,000 views, which is, you know, to us, amazing. You know, the thought of those, that many people have watched it and got some information that they found beneficial. Always one sad person who's watched it 50,000 times. I'm not really quite sure which, but either
way, you know, I think what Mark highlighted today to me, I didn't realize it was such an important number, is that we now have hit 1,000 views per day. So I would really invite our audience to go on YouTube, on our YouTube channel that is called No Silver Bullet 4PD, number 4PD, No Silver Bullet 4PD, and have a look, because there is a wealth of information spanning 2 years with various topics that you might find very interesting.
Do you ever think about Parkinson's as a gift?
Yes.
No, it's happened to me to think of it in that way. But actually, I do realize that actually, I have had symptoms for a couple of years before being diagnosed, so I probably have been 5 years in that journey, and my view might be different in another 5 years, another 10 years. Mark has had it for 8 years, so he's got a different perspective. But for me, it has basically been the only way out from a hectic life that was slowly killing me. And yes, I'm thankful. I'm very thankful in a sense. I wish, of course, I didn't have Parkinson's, but I'm at the same time thankful that it has changed my life so much for the better. I don't know, Mark, do you sometimes see it as a gift?
I'm not sure I'd describe it as a gift to people if you ask me directly. I think it's not as harsh as perhaps it could be. I mean, there are some awful things you can get diagnosed with in life, and this is probably one of the relatively easier ones in terms of, I guess from my perspective, I'm quite lucky because my progression has been quite slow. And all the things Michelle and I talked about earlier about how to deal with, you know, your Parkinson's above your medicine. You know, I did a lot of sport for probably 10, 15 years, high intensity games of squash. And I think that just proves to me how beneficial exercise is. I think that definitely slowed my progression. So, yeah, not a gift. But I think quite pleased at how it's developed in terms of who I've met and how it's changed my life and how it's made me slow down and refocus and see what's more important. I mean, it's that classic thing when somebody sadly dies, you think, I'll live life to the full every single day. But that sensation drifts away really quickly and you find yourself 3 weeks later not having the same feelings again. And I think you need to bottle it as you feel it first time around and just do things as you should do things and make the best of things, really. So in that respect, I think Parkinson's, is beneficial in some respects, bizarrely.
Well, that's why I was disagreeing with you guys earlier. I feel that you have to be selfish with Parkinson's. So you have to make sure that you work out all the time and make sure you're helping all your brain and in your body. You have to be selfish in your own workouts.
I agree. In a sense, you need to take care of yourself and give yourself time that maybe you were not giving yourself before, that's for sure. But at the same time, there should be room in that space for also focusing on others, I believe. So there's enough for both.
I was being kind of cheeky because I had written something called gift as gift or poison, because the German word for poison happens to be gift.
That's beautiful.
So I was just sort of being cheeky there, but I agree that I don't know if I'd call it selfish. I think I'd call it self-care, because by taking care of ourselves, we're also taking care of people around us. You mentioned the toll it takes on families and other people and how it affects everyone. And by giving people a forum with No Silver Bullet for Parkinson's and on some other forums that we have, we really have a chance to draw in people who are also carers or partners or people caught in the netting or the webbing of this disease, even though they don't personally have it. It's hard to watch people suffer with what I can't even control in myself. And you mentioned you're getting married.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, life continues. And actually, I have a lot of respect and love for my fiance, Beatrice, who basically, with her eyes wide open, goes into the journey with me.
And Mark, you've been married how many years?
32, 33 years, long time.
Wow.
Great. Wow.
So, gentlemen, what kind of exercise do you guys do?
Funnily enough, we were doing the same kind of exercises, but not together. I reassure you.
Oh, yeah.
and down, and lift.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, there is basically, we were both watching the same YouTube influencer who publishes new videos every day. When I talk about being systematic and disciplined, she's like an example for me. And basically, I think that I'll talk for myself here, but for quite a while, I was following those videos that were, you can basically, those videos are mainly focused on cardio or muscle building, not so much flexibility. And over the years, my routine has developed into spending 45 minutes every day doing weights. And this is not because I want to become a bodybuilder, but it's basically, I think it helps with posture, with muscle buildup also helps the brain, I've read quite recently. And in the afternoon, I do another 45 minutes, which is intense, basically cross trainer, or I go for a walk. So this is very demanding. The weights in the morning are quite fun because I can listen to one of my favorite radio stations, Radio Park, obviously. But basically, the afternoon, the cross trainer is I wouldn't call it pure pain, but it is not fun. But I think that this is part of the routine that you have to build up. And interestingly, again, advertising our channel a tiny bit, we had the pleasure of interviewing Professor Bas Bloom, who is one of the world's specialists on Parkinson's. a couple of months ago, and there is a whole session within here on our YouTube channel about exercise, the type of exercise you should be doing. So that basically seems to be focusing a lot on the cardio, exercise being quite important.
I liked how you put it, that exercise has become your full-time job now.
Yes, yes.
That seems to be the way that most people who are really doing well with this disease have taken as an approach to make the search for different avenues of taking care of themselves their full-time job, their most important priority over anything else, because we can't do anything else unless we do that, right?
So it's quite frustrating the way we all agree how beneficial exercise can be, and yet a lot of professionals you go and see, you know, doctors and neurologists, as Michelle said right at the beginning of this, don't mention it. It could be quite an easy fix for people to come along and say, really sorry, you've got Parkinson's, take this medication. But by the way, do more of this. Now, whether that's, you know, you're an athlete and you can run more or work out more, or whether you're old and frail and you just get up and sit down 10 times in your chair, you know, do whatever braces your heart, but just do something. And I think if the health service, certainly in the UK, prescribed that more than drugs, I think it would help a lot of people with Parkinson's. You know,
absolutely. And I'd like to add as well that actually this is not just about exercising the body, like we just discussed, through weights and cardio and yoga, but it's also about exercising your brain. And I would recommend certain brain exercise apps, which I think can be positive to everyone. It doesn't just help with Parkinson's, it helps with all kinds of conditions, or preventing all kinds of conditions. But also in my case, I suffer a lot from rigidity, so I do a lot of hand exercises. Well, a lot. I do half an hour every day. And I do some voice exercises. So it's the whole body, really. That's basically, we're becoming athletes in our own category.
You sound like you've got a good bass voice. If we were to ever start a choir, we might have to hit you up. Now that
Well, thank you. That is not always the case, because, you know, sometimes it's irritating. And I'm sure a lot of other people with Parkinson's will identify with that. When you speak to your partner and she asks you to repeat systematically everything you say, and you're not entirely sure whether you're not speaking high with a high enough voice, or whether you're not articulating enough, or what else is not working. So
I think that's called selective hearing.
Stop it, Heather. Beatrice, you're an angel.
It's only when you get married normally that these things happen, right?
On Wednesdays, so we're working with the Motivation Foundation, Darby Schlosser, based out of Las Vegas, here in the States, on building out a story that we all share together. We all get together on Wednesday and go a little bit further into the story. And as we go through the story, it's attached to different digits of pi, and we can then memorize large quantities of. So then we take that, after we memorize a chunk of it, we can then play with it while we're exercising and say on the beat, 3, 1, 4, 1, 5, 9, and I'm throwing punches for people who can't see. And it does what's called dual tasking, and it increases our cognitive load and makes it a little bit harder for us to move, and kind of mimics a little bit of an off state, makes the freezing episodes that normally happen in our movement start to happen in our thoughts. And then we have to fight through that and find techniques where we can overcome it. And the shared story becomes something that we can do that with. And then the fact that we're together in a social atmosphere, we can look to each other on Zoom for small cues that help us. Say we get stuck in a part of the story and we're on a certain number, Mike might tell me, you know, we're dancing or something, which might lead me to a part of the story that jars my memory just a little bit and gets me through that fascination of thought. So it was really interesting how he mentioned the cognitive work. So these apps that you use, can you describe your favorite one to me and how you find value in it?
Well, actually, I think that I will mention two or maybe three. Can I mention the names?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
Yes. So my favorite one is called Lumosity. Then I also like Elevate. And I used to work with something called Peak. So Lumosity, L-U-M-O-S-I-T-Y, Elevate, and Peak. I think that they basically, all three are combining basically a verbal-based and mathematical-based questions. Lumosity is really interesting because it brings other dimensions as well, such as orientation, So basically, this is sort of like calling on various types of mental skills and forces your brain to challenges in various dimensions. They're relatively fun. You basically try to maintain, to build up your score and to maintain your score. Or you can even compare yourself with Lumosity to other people in your geographic area, or basically the whole of the US or New York area if you're based there. So it basically, there is a real desire to shine. This is quite playful. I do 10 minutes of each every day, every single day, even on holiday. That's a part of the routine that I just do before reading the news in the morning.
Where are you ranked at currently? You seem quite proud.
It doesn't give you a total rank. It gives you a score. And basically, I was quite pleased to see that my score was quite high for the Oxford area, which I would assume includes a lot of retired professors and clever people.
Nice.
It doesn't make you an intelligent person. You just sort of like more technical than anything else. But it was quite fun, and you can't help the competition a tiny bit.
You are a humble person. I'm sorry. Come on, Michel.
The modern version of the crossword puzzle.
Yes, yes. I think that basically someone commented on the website about the fact that actually working gives you a lot of mental stimulation. And the crosswords, of course, gives you mental stimulation. The thing with those apps is that they give you multifaceted types of challenges. And I think they sort of like more varied and pull your brain in more directions than a single, basically doing a puzzle or doing a crosswords, which is also quite enjoyable.
For our less technically advanced folks out there, you're saying apps. Are these things that we can find on our phone?
You can find them on your phone. I'm using an iPhone. I'm buying them from the App Store, but I'm sure they're on Google Store as well. Yeah, they cost around £30 per year, so I guess $40 or something. So it is not super cheap. I think it is really worth it, to be perfectly frank with you. If you divide it by 365, it's not a lot of money for training your brain.
Mark, you use these apps too?
Occasionally. I've resisted trying to find Michel on them because I don't want to be embarrassed. But I'll try some. I'll do the crossword every now and again, that sort of thing as well. But no, Michel is a routine animal in that respect. It's great.
Then I was going to say one thing that I found quite stimulating from a brain exercise standpoint has been the fact that quite recently we started posting videos on TikTok that sort of like involved several challenges. One of the first challenge was basically learning to be concise and to talk in an inviting tone in 60 seconds or 45 seconds, while normally we were more used to videos that were basically some of our videos on YouTube. Most of them include a 30-minute presentation by the speaker and 1 hour of Q&A afterwards. So this is a different exercise. TikTok is about being concise and trying to communicate something quick and in a powerful way. Challenge number two was basically to learn how to edit videos. Now, I'm 57. I'm not, I would say, computer illiterate, far from that, but I'm really not computer literate to the point of being able to edit my own videos. So that was learning number two. And basically, learning number three is to sort of like how to sort of like build an audience over time. So my only point with that is that we were mentioning those three apps that help you train your brain, but there are a lot of other activities that can call on various aspects if you want. So you can, I think it's a combination, but actually it goes beyond the apps. Being something new is really quite critical as well.
Do either of you have DBS?
No.
Have you thought about anything like any of the other treatments such as DBS? Or has it been have you been invited to look into it?
No, not yet. I don't consider my symptoms to be, in that sort of category, to be honest. I find that I can manage them. No, with the stuff I do at the moment. So I'm sure in time, potentially. I mean, we had a guy talking about that as well. I forgot his name. It's kind of straight out of my head. Alberto?
No, Alfonso.
Fasano.
I'm so sorry. Alfonso Fasano, exactly.
Okay.
He's at Toronto. Yes, that's a team. Alfonso Fasano, who basically is a professor of neurology in Toronto. Interestingly,
did he write the book with Ben Stetcher?
Actually, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, brain fables. Yeah. He's great.
And Alfonso basically was telling us about the various techniques, technology angles that you can basically use to help yourself. And the DBS was one, but he also mentioned pumps and basically all different the ultrasound techniques of treating your brain. Yeah. I think that this is definitely something to keep in mind. What was really interesting for me, one of the takeaways, because there was recently in Manchester, in Birmingham in the UK, a situation where 25 people who had had DBS were basically tested. And it was found that in almost no case, the electrodes had been placed properly. So it meant that in many cases, it wasn't working. It wasn't working very well, or it could basically work quite bad. And I asked Alfonso, basically, how can a patient decide where to go for an operation? Because it's quite tricky. You don't really want to go and waste time, money, and your health opening your brain for a zero result in the best case. And he basically was telling us that we should really go for places where they do a lot of operations. And apparently that place in Toronto, where Alfonso is operating, there's a lot of operations, a very high number, has a lot of experience. So to me, I keep DBS in my mind as a place, as something that I would basically rely on should I need it in the future, definitely.
I think he said as well, Michel, that almost like a rule of thumb, if you're going to go and see somebody, they need to be doing about 30 procedures a year.
Yes, a year. That's right.
And I think that was a problem in Birmingham. The people just weren't doing enough operations to have the technical know-how to solve the problems, really. So it's definitely something to bear in mind if you're going to consider that.
One aspect as well that I was not aware of is that basically it's not just a question of wanting to have an operation. You need to be eligible to have it. So I think that actually they basically scrutinize people they select people quite finely to make sure that they would benefit from it. So I think that people should be aware of the fact that if you want to have DBS, you just need to make sure that it is something that it is not naturally efficient for everyone.
I think from a personal point of view, one of the things that probably attracts me more is there's a professor in England called Roger Barker. I'm not sure if you've come across him. He's actually doing a cell replacement therapy at the moment and just getting a trial going. And it was a study, I think, done, probably going to make this all wrong, but about 10, 12 years ago in Scandinavia, where they did this cell replacement therapy, put cells back into the brain, and then decided that the new cells would be infected by the old cells. So what's the point of doing it? Because eventually they'll die as well. But they forgot to realize that the time frame was 40 or 50 years. So if you're 60, 70 years old and having this operation, you're going to die before the things get corrupted anyway. So they're readdressing it. That's the sort of thing that would interest me personally, I think.
So do you know what is next for No Silver Bullet for PD?
Well, in terms of speakers, as Michel said, we've got this Dutch guy, Rick, I always get his name wrong,
Hemmick.
Was recommended by Professor Baz Bloom, obviously. He's up there with the world's leading authorities on PD, and he's going to talk to us. We've got a lady who's talking to us in April, a lady called Julie Jones, who presented, there's a lecture every year in Edinburgh, which is all about PD, basically, and she was honoured to do a leading lecture last year on exercise again. So we'll talk to her, and we got Dr. Laurie Mishley, who I'm sure you guys know very well, talking to us as well, which is quite a coup for us, I think, really. And we have to thank Simon Stott for that. Basically, he helped us contact her and have a good conversation. So there's a lot of good stuff.
He's fun.
Yeah, Simon's a great guy.
And then we had Peter Tass in June about the wonderful glove.
The glove, yeah.
So we have some very good speakers lined up in the next few months. And I think that for us, it's first of all, I'm extremely thankful to all those sometimes quite famous people for being so generous with their time. But I think that having some key speakers like that helps us increase our audience and reach out to more people, make ourselves publicly known to a larger number. And thank you again for today as well, for making us known to a larger number of people. I think that this is really what it's about for us. What's in store for the future is basically reaching out to as many people as we can and trying to help them, as I said, become a generalist in their condition, to know all what there is to know at a generalist level about Parkinson's. They should know what's affecting them and basically having the information to make the right decisions, which will depend on every single person. We're not dogmatic. We have people who say red light is great. We have people who say red light is not good or is useless. So we're not sort of like dogmatic in what we say. We bring the right voices to the table, and people can make their own decision. But I think that one thing I wanted to say is that there are two things we haven't spoken about today that are related to music that can be hugely beneficial to people with Parkinson's. Well, three things. Playing an instrument, I think, is one, if you can. Singing is very good for the voice, and dancing is very good for coordination. Now, I do none of those things because I'm not very gifted from, those aspects, but actually, I think those are things to keep in mind that we haven't touched on today, but are very important.
Nathan and Heather are both very good singers. They'll play musical instruments too. That's why this voice is so smooth. And
Yeah, we're going to start a band. When we need a bass singer, we'll hit you. Hey, I wanted to give you an opportunity one more time to let our listeners know how they can find you on the internet.
So it's very simple. You should go to YouTube and visit No Silver Bullet number 4 PD. No Silver Bullet 4 PD. Those, you have it there. Thank you very much for showing it. And actually, in the same way, you can find us on Instagram, on TikTok, under the same names. Here we go. And I think that Mark is also feeding a Twitter channel from time to time. So now the last one is the TikTok. TikTok is a totally different exercise because this is just me only talking for 60 seconds every couple of days maximum to our audience. This is an experiment to try to reach out to a wider spectrum of people, and hopefully it will be successful. So the best way you can help us is, sorry, I would say the best way you can help us is follow us, please.
Exactly.
Plus, and that's where you do all your hip hop dancing?
That's where the dancing takes place.
Sorry, Mark, go ahead. What were you saying?
I was just saying also the recordings are turning to podcasts as well. So you find us on Spotify or on Apple or whatever podcast channel you listen to. So
the question is not where to find us, it's basically where, how to avoid us. Impossible.
Exactly.
We've got the market cornered.
Twitter as well?
Yes. No Silver Bullet for PD, funnily enough.
Looking for
there's a theme emerging there.
Exactly.
Oh, got it. NSB4PD, got it.
Well done, thank you.
You guys are very well spoken, and you fill in all the blanks. It's the easiest interview you could possibly do here.
Well, we normally have the interviewers on our sessions, so it's and actually, I must say as well that we should not forget that we interviewed Michael like a year and a half ago. So the mutual interviewing process is not new, and we can carry on for a long time, I hope. You were nice to us. We were nice to you.
Will you be at the WPC by any chance in Barcelona?
I probably will, yes, with my fiance.
I'm hoping to be, but I'm planning on moving house and it might tie in with that. So if I'm not moving that week, I'll probably go there. So if we do, we'll certainly try and meet a few people and shake a few hands and have a few beers.
I suspect you'll be busy with all those books behind you.
Exactly. They're shakes, right? We should just be there.
I know Mike Q's going. Nathan, you going?
You know what? I'm not positive if I'm going or not. I would love to. We'll see. I might like decide the day before or something.
it's quite a long flight.
Darby's going to be staying in a place that I rented, so there might be an extra space for you.
I understand that. Thank you for the invite.
I can't wait to see everybody.
I was saying it's over 3 or 4 days. Is that right, the event?
Yes.
Yeah. 3rd through the 7th of July.
Some people I haven't met that I've talked to, including Heather and Nathan. I've met Mike many times, but Heather and Nathan, you gentlemen, I've talked to you guys for a while and never met you guys. So it's going to be interesting to meet people.
How do you know we have legs?
How do you know we're wearing pants?
I wasn't when I started this interview.
Anyways,
no comments.
smart man right there.
The Europeans are so suave compared to the Americans.
I know, when I see the Dens are emerging, I backpedal furiously.
Hey guys, this has been fun.
Yeah, it has. Great.
Thank you very much. It was a lot of fun.
Really nice to meet you guys.
All right, have a good afternoon. Take care, everyone. Bye bye.